All right, let's peel back the layers on something we all rely on but rarely think about. Imagine your morning coffee, your shower, the very safety of your building. What if the hidden systems making all that possible were slowly falling apart right under our noses? Today, we're taking a deep dive into the fascinating, complex, and incredibly vital world of water infrastructure and the company that's kind of at the heart of repairing and rebuilding it, Core & Main, Inc. You've sent us a stack of insightful sources, and our mission here is to extract the most important nuggets, really give you a shortcut to being truly well-informed about this critical sector.
It's true, yeah. When we talk infrastructure, our minds often jump straight to roads and bridges, right?
Yeah, the visible stuff.
Exactly. But these hidden networks, the pipes, the valves, the drainage systems, they're arguably even more fundamental. And they're facing a staggering deficit. I mean, it impacts every community across the country.
Staggering deficit.
Yeah, our sources really lay out the sheer scale of the investment needed. And they illuminate how a company like Core & Main becomes, well, an absolutely crucial player in that landscape. It's about understanding not just what they do, but why their work matters so profoundly to our daily lives and, you know, the future resilience of our communities.
Exactly. So whether you're prepping for maybe a crucial meeting or catching up on the latest in this essential industry, or maybe you're just insanely curious about what keeps our modern world flowing, get ready for some surprising facts and I think a whole lot of aha moments. We're going to explore Core & Main's unique business model, the massive, often unseen market they operate in, how they're strategically growing, and of course the risks and the incredible opportunities they face. Ready to dive into the invisible lifeline.
So to kick us off then, who is Core & Main? You might not see their logo on a billboard every day, right?
Not typically, no. But our sources show they are a truly massive, specialized distributor. Operating right across the U.S., they act almost like the central nervous system for our water, wastewater, storm drainage, and fire protection infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Can you break down their role a bit more for us?
Certainly. Yeah, if we connect this to the bigger picture, Core & Main functions as an absolutely essential link in what's really a highly complex and fragmented ecosystem.
Fragmented, a good.
Very fragmented. Imagine you've got over 5,000 distinct suppliers on one side.
Wow.
Ranging from pipe manufacturers to, you know, specialized valve producers. And then on the other side, more than 60,000 customers.
60,000.
Yeah. Everything from small municipal water departments, tiny towns, to large private utility companies, general contractors, even fire protection specialists.
Mm-hmm.
Core & Main bridges this gap.
Okay.
Our sources aptly describe them as a critical intermediary, and that's really not an overstatement. They aren't just, you know, shipping boxes. They are deeply embedded in their customers' projects.
Yeah.
Well, this means providing crucial consultative sales support, helping engineers and contractors maybe optimize designs through project value engineering.
Value engineering.
Right. Finding efficiencies or better materials, and even offering on-site assistance during complex installations. So they're not just a product vendor. They're really a solutions provider deeply integrated into the whole project lifecycle.
That makes a lot of sense. And one point that really jumped out at me from the sources, what you might call a true aha moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's how Core & Main leverages the unique challenges of the U.S. water system itself.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about, what, roughly 50,000 distinct community water systems across the country?
That's the number, yeah. Around 50,000, many of them quite small.
And here's the kicker, right? Each often has unique sort of legacy-driven technical specifications.
Exactly. Old systems.
You can't just slap a generic pipe on there, especially when you're trying to replace a part of a system that's been in the ground for 50, 80, maybe even 100 years.
Absolutely not.
So our sources emphasize Core & Main's extensive branch network around 370 locations as this sort of living, breathing repository of this localized, often unwritten institutional knowledge. How significant is that local knowledge moat in practical terms? And, I mean, how difficult would it be for a new entrant to even begin replicating it?
That's an excellent point, and it's precisely where Core & Main's competitive advantage truly shines. This local knowledge moat, as our sources vividly describe it, is incredibly durable and exceptionally difficult for new entrants or even, you know, larger, less specialized distributors to replicate.
Why so difficult?
Well, imagine a small town in, say, rural Pennsylvania. Their water mains might be an obscure ductile iron specification from the 1940s.
Right.
Located under historic brick streets requiring specific fittings subject to unique local permitting quirks.
A purely digital or centralized e-commerce model, it simply cannot match the nuanced understanding of those local codes, the exact product specs, or the existing infrastructure that Core and Main's local teams possess.
It's the people on the ground.
It's the people. Their branch managers, their sales associates, they often have decades of experience in that specific region. They know the local contractors by name. They understand the unique geology. They might even remember the specific types of pipes laid down generations ago.
Right.
So this deep, almost familial knowledge ensures they can provide the right product in the right place at the right time with the right expertise, all tailored to specific, often decades-old, requirements. This deepens customer relationships, fosters immense trust, and crucially, it creates significant switching costs.
Switching costs,
yeah.
Meaning it's hard for customers to leave them.
Exactly. For a municipality facing an emergency water main break, the speed, the accuracy, the expertise of Core and Main are invaluable and makes them indispensable. Trying to replicate that extensive human and logistical network, plus the decades of accumulated localized information, it would require prohibitive capital and, frankly, an unrealistic timeline.
So they're not just selling stuff. They're solving very specific local problems.
Mm-hmm.
That's a powerful differentiator. And what exactly are they distributing?
Yeah.
Our sources detail this one-stop shop approach. I mean, we're talking pipes, valves, fittings, ductile iron, PVC, HDPE.
Yep, all the core materials.
All the way to storm drainage products, fire protection systems, even advanced tech like smart meters. Could you elaborate on that range? Why is it so critical for their customers?
It's an incredibly comprehensive offering, yeah.
And
that's vital for their customers who really want simplicity and reliability. When we say one-stop shop, we truly mean it.
Okay.
So those pipes, valves, fittings, and municipality might need to replace a section of mainline with heavy-duty ductile iron, you know, known for its strength in high-pressure systems.
Right.
Or for new installs, they might opt for more flexible, corrosion-resistant PVC or HDPE pipes, especially in areas with, say, seismic activity or corrosive soil.
Right.
And beyond just the pipes, they distribute a vast array of specialized valves and fittings. Things needed to control water flow, connect different pipe sizes, manage pressure. It gets complicated quickly.
I bet.
Then, moving to storm drainage, these are critical components like culverts, grates, catch basins. They manage rainwater runoff, prevent flooding, erosion, increasingly important stuff with changing weather patterns. And for fire protection, they supply everything from sprinkler system components to hydrants, ensuring buildings and communities are safe. But what's truly forward-looking is their push into advanced metering solutions.
The smart meters you mentioned.
Right. AMR, automated meter reading, and AMI, advanced metering infrastructure. These are essentially smart systems that automatically collect and transmit water usage data.
So no more meter readers walking around.
Increasingly, yes. And it allows utilities to monitor consumption in real time, quickly detect leaks, improve billing accuracy, and just manage their water resources far more efficiently. So yeah, if a municipality needs to replace a 50-year-old pipe, upgrade its stormwater system, or outfit a new development with smart water meters.
Core and Main can handle it all.
They can provide it all, yeah.
Yep.
Backed by that local expertise we talked about.
This incredible breadth and depth, though, product services,
yeah.
How do they actually deliver on that one-stop shop promise across such a vast geography like the U.S.? I mean, it sounds logistically intense.
Oh, it absolutely is. And it's a testament to their operational excellence. It's all delivered through that massive geographic footprint we mentioned earlier.
The 370 branches.
Exactly. Those approximately 370 branch locations across the U.S., they're not just warehouses. They really embody Core and Main's motto, local expertise nationwide. This decentralized network ensures proximity to their customers, which is crucial for timely delivery, often same day or next day. Contractors can't afford project delays waiting for materials, right?
No way. Time is money.
Exactly. It also enables that responsive local support, which goes back to the deep local knowledge. Now, this dense network of branches is then seamlessly backed by a national supply chain and distribution centers. This offers tremendous efficiencies and, importantly, purchasing power that small regional players just can't match.
Ah, the scale advantage again.
Precisely. This centralized purchasing and logistics capability allows them to effectively manage an inventory of over 225,000 SKUs.
225,000 different products.
Individual product types, yeah. Ensuring product availability and efficient movement of goods from suppliers right to their customers' job sites.
And who exactly are these 60,000 plus customers benefiting from this whole sophisticated system?
The sales breakdown in our sources is quite telling. 42% municipal, 38% non-residential, 20% residential. That diversity seems quite strategic, doesn't it? It means they're not putting all their eggs in one basket.
Indeed. That balanced exposure is really a cornerstone of their resilience. Mm. It allows Core and Main to capitalize on various market drivers simultaneously,
mm-hmm.
you know, public infrastructure spending, commercial construction, new residential development.
So they benefit from different parts of the economy moving at different times.
Exactly. It significantly mitigates the risk of over-concentration in any single sector.
Yeah.
So, for example, if residential construction experiences a slowdown, maybe due to rising interest rates.
Which we've seen.
Right. The municipal segment, which is often driven by essential infrastructure upgrades and those regulatory mandates we'll talk about, that can provide a more stable revenue base.
Uh-huh.
Similarly, the non-residential sector, everything from office buildings to industrial parks, it operates on its own cycle.
So it smooths things out. It provides a degree of resilience against downturns in any one segment. Yeah. Helps smooth out overall business volatility over time. It really demonstrates a well-thought-out approach to market exposure.
Okay, so we've established Core and Main's vital role, this essential intermediary. But for them to truly thrive, the underlying market needs to be robust, right?
Absolutely.
So what's the bigger picture here? Our sources paint a picture of an immense critical market. We're talking about like a generational investment cycle driven by a truly urgent need to modernize America's water systems.
You've hit on the core of the opportunity there. What's really compelling here is just the sheer scale of the problem. The American Society of Civil Engineers, the ASCE.
Right, the infrastructure report card people.
Them, exactly. They've consistently given incredibly poor grades to our nation's drinking water and wastewater infrastructure. Their most recent report card gave drinking water a C and wastewater a D+. That highlights a really dire state of affairs.
C and D plus plus. Mm-hmm. Not good.
Not good at all. The underlying assets are simply old and failing. Our sources tell us the average age of a U.S. water pipe has skyrocketed from just 25 years back in 1970 to a staggering 45 years in 2020.
Doubled, almost.
Practically. And this widespread deterioration, it translates to an estimated 250,000 to 300,000 water main breaks every single year.
That many?
Every year. That's not just an inconvenience. It's a massive amount of water loss, service disruption to homes and businesses, increased repair costs, and critically significant contamination risk. Think about the economic impact of a major break or the public health implications of a boil water advisory impacting tens of thousands of residents. It's a real crisis, sort of bubbling beneath the surface of every community.
And the cost to fix this hidden crisis, I mean, our sources cite EPA estimates that are frankly mind-boggling. The 2023 Drinking Water Infrastructure Needs Survey identified what, $625 billion needed over the next 20 years just for drinking water?
That's right, $625 billion and $423 billion of that is specifically for pipeline replacement.
Just the pipes.
Just the pipes. Then the 2022 Clean Watershed Needs Survey added another $630.1 billion for wastewater and stormwater infrastructure. That number was up a staggering 73% from the prior survey.
So adding those up, what does this all mean for the scale of the opportunity?
It means we're talking about a combined, well-documented need of over $1.25 trillion.
Trillion, with a T.
With a T. Across drinking water, wastewater, and stormwater over the next two decades. And look, this isn't a discretionary wish list. It's the bare minimum required to bring our systems up to modern standards and ensure public health and safety.
So a massive baseline demand.
This figure represents a powerful, multi-decade demand backdrop for Core and Main's products and services. It suggests a market that isn't just growing incrementally, but is undergoing a necessary and massive overhaul. This isn't some short-term trend. It's a structural demand shift that will underpin activity for decades.
$1 trillion in needed investment.
Oh.
That's a colossal number. A key question that emerges from this, though, is how does such a massive deficit get addressed?
Mm-hmm.
Are we just hoping municipalities somehow find the money? Or is there a bigger catalyst?
That's where the federal government has stepped in, really, as a significant accelerant. The Bipartisan Infrastructure Law, the BIL.
Ah, yes, the BIL.
Enacted back in November 2021, it acts as a crucial catalyst. It allocates over $50 billion specifically for water infrastructure projects.
$50 billion. Okay, that helps.
It's critical because this federal funding, it de-risks municipal project financing, often through grants or low-interest loans, which helps bridge those local budget gaps. It also speeds up those shovel-ready projects that might otherwise just languish due to funding uncertainty. uncertainties.
So it unlocks projects that were stuck.
Exactly. It transforms the conversation from if these vital upgrades happen to when. It provides a significant committed boost to demand across the country, especially for projects that might have been deferred for years and years.
But it's not just about the federal money, though, right? Our sources also highlight regulatory mandates pushing this forward. These aren't just suggestions. They're like legal imperatives.
Precisely. Yeah, beyond the direct funding, regulatory mandates are creating a powerful non-discretionary driver for investment. A prime example is the EPA's active push to replace an estimated 9 million lead service lines across the country.
Lead pipes. Big issue.
Huge issue. And there's dedicated funding streams within the BIL specifically for that. The health risks associated with lead in drinking water are undeniable, making this a public health emergency. So these aren't optional upgrades. Municipalities are legally compelled to address them.
Okay, so lead lines are one big driver.
And there's another looming wave, emerging regulations around PFAS.
Ah, the forever chemicals.
Those insidious forever chemicals, exactly. These are a class of chemicals found in everything from, you know, non-stick cookware to firefighting foams, and they've contaminated water sources nationwide. New federal limits are expected to drive multi-billion dollar investments in new advanced treatment technologies and system upgrades. Again, these will not be discretionary expenditures. They'll be legally binding imperatives for water utilities.
So we have this massive documented need. We have federal funding acting as a catalyst.
Yeah.
And we have regulatory pressure forcing action. Historically, municipal spending could be quite cyclical, couldn't it? Tied to economic ups and downs.
Mm-hmm.
Does this new environment suggest maybe a shift away from that?
That's a perceptive question, yeah. And what's fascinating here is that the current environment strongly suggests a structural shift. Historically, yes, municipal spending was often pro-cyclical. Projects could indeed be delayed or scaled back during economic downturns when local tax revenues dipped. But the convergence of this massive documented infrastructure deficit with dedicated federal funding and those legally binding regulations, it's transforming much of the spending from discretionary to absolutely essential.
Can't really put it off anymore.
A municipality simply cannot indefinitely ignore a federal mandate to replace lead lines, or a decree from the EPA to upgrade a wastewater treatment plant to remove PFA. So while residential and non-residential construction still has its cycles, and Core and Main has exposure there, remember?
Right, about 58% combined.
Yeah. But the Core Municipal segment, representing that 42% of their sales, is now underpinned by a really powerful secular tailwind. This fundamentally dampens overall business volatility for decades to come, provides a much more stable demand floor.
Interesting. So less bumpy.
Potentially, yes. In fact, the U.S. Treasury has even observed state and local capital investment bucking the typical trends since the BIL's passage, which strongly supports this thesis of sustained long-term demand, somewhat independent of short-term economic fluctuations.
Okay, so it sounds like a growing market with a lot of long-term stability baked in now. But who are they competing against in this space? Our sources describe a highly fragmented U.S. water utility industry. You mentioned 90% of those 50,000 systems serve fewer than 10,000 people. Does this fragmentation present challenges or maybe barriers for others trying to enter?
It's precisely that fragmentation, yeah, combined with the nature of the products themselves, that creates incredibly significant barriers to entry. It effectively protects incumbents like Core and Main.
How so? What are the barriers?
Well, consider the capital intensity required. To establish a nationwide network of nearly 400 distribution centers, each stocked with specialized inventory, that's a prohibitive upfront investment for new players.
Which costs.
Massive. Then building deep, trusted relationships with over 5,000 diverse suppliers and securing access to specialized, often limited distribution products that takes decades of consistent performance and partnership.
Can't just flip a switch.
Nope. Furthermore, there's that local knowledge we've discussed. The understanding of thousands of unique local product specifications, permitting requirements, existing infrastructure quirks that can only be built over years of on-the-ground experience in each community.
Back to the moat.
Back to the moat. And finally, managing an inventory of over 225,000 SKUs and ensuring timely, accurate job site delivery. That requires incredibly sophisticated logistics, inventory management, and technology platforms. These aren't minor hurdles. They are formidable walls around the business, making it extremely difficult for new entrants to compete at scale or to dislodge established players.
Okay, with such a fragmented market and these really high barriers to entry, Core and Main must have some pretty serious competitive advantages to maintain its position. Our sources certainly highlight several, positioning them as a formidable player, especially against their primary national competitor, Ferguson Playrick. Can you unpack those advantages for us?
Absolutely. Their durable competitive moat, it's built on two key pillars that really intertwine and reinforce each other. First, scale-based advantages. Their significant national scale gives them substantial purchasing power with suppliers.
Buying power.
Right. They can procure products on more favorable terms, which helps maintain competitive pricing and, importantly, healthy margins. This scale also supports their vast national supply chain, allowing for that incredible breadth of over 225,000 products, truly making them that one-stop shop. Smaller regional players simply cannot replicate this logistical prowess or product breadth.
Got it. Scale is number one. What's number two?
Second, and perhaps even more importantly, is their differentiated, deeply embedded service model, the local service, nationwide thing. Through their 370 branches, they foster deep, long-term relationships with customers.
The trust factor.
Exactly. In this environment, intimate knowledge of local project specs, rapid response times for emergencies, the consultative expertise provided by their local teams, it means that price often becomes a less critical factor in purchasing decisions.
Interesting. So it's not just about the lowest price.
Often not, no. Customers are willing to pay a premium for reliability and expertise that prevents costly delays or critical failures. They are not just a vendor. They become embedded in the customer's operations as a trusted partner. That creates those high switching costs we talked about.
Here's another really interesting aspect, one that I found particularly insightful from the sources.
Yeah.
Their acquisition strategy. It isn't just about growth. It seems like it's a competitive advantage in itself.
How do you mean?
Well, our sources describe it as systematically acquiring smaller local competitors, not just for their revenue, but to kind of absorb that local expertise that defines their moat. When they buy a company like, say, Dana Kepner.
Good example, yeah.
They're not just buying a business. They're gaining decades of embedded customer relationships and an intimate understanding of regional product specs in high-growth states like Arizona, Colorado, Nevada. Then they integrate that into their national platform, giving the acquired entity, you know, superior technology and greater purchasing power. It feels like a truly virtuous cycle.
It absolutely is a virtuous cycle and a highly sophisticated strategy for compounding value. This proactive approach to consolidation in a fragmented market is incredibly effective. M&A strengthens the local moat, adds new talent, expands their customer base, crucially acquires specific regional knowledge that would take decades to build organically.
Right.
This then drives stronger organic growth within the combined entity and generates robust cash flow, which in turn fuels further value accretive M&A. Core and Main completed, 10 acquisitions in fiscal 2023 alone?
10, yes, $780 million.
Deployed $780 million in capital. That demonstrates their commitment and discipline in this strategy. It's a powerful flywheel that allows them to continuously expand their competitive advantages, deepen their market penetration, and increase their overall market share in this highly fragmented industry.
That's a compelling picture of strategic growth and competitive positioning. Now let's talk numbers for a second. Our sources highlight a strong and consistent financial track record, 15 consecutive years of sales growth. I mean, even through various economic cycles, that's pretty impressive for any company, let alone one in industrial distribution. What's the latest data showing about their performance?
Looking at the numbers from our sources, yeah, the financial performance has been robust. Core & Main hit record net sales of over $6.7 billion in fiscal 2023. Grew to approximately $7.4 billion in fiscal 2024.
Strong growth.
Yeah. And for the first quarter of fiscal 2025, net sales continued this upward trajectory, grew a strong 9.8% year over year to $1.91 billion.
What's driving that growth?
It was primarily driven by higher sales volumes across their product categories and significant contributions from those strategic acquisitions we just discussed.
Okay. And profitability.
Profitability has also remained very healthy. While gross margins, hovering around 26.6% to 26.7%, they've seen a slight moderation from the, you know, the elevated peaks experienced during periods of intense supply chain disruption.
Right. Things got crazy for a bit there.
They did. But management has demonstrated an ability to successfully offset higher inventory costs with proactive margin initiatives and those accretive acquisitions. Adjusted EBITDA margins, they're normalizing a bit but remain strong, guided to be around 12.5% to 12.8% for fiscal 2025.
So still solid margins.
Very solid. These are strong indicators of operational efficiency, effective pricing power, and the ability to manage costs, even in a dynamic environment.
That's an impressive picture of profitability and growth.
Yeah.
But as you know, cash flow is the lifeblood for any growth-oriented company, right? Especially one making significant acquisitions. How does Core & Main's cash generation stack up? What does it tell us about their operational efficiency?
Absolutely, cash flow is critical, and the business model here is inherently highly cash generative, which is vital for funding their strategic priorities like M&A and organic growth without excessive reliance on external financing.
Okay.
They generated a record $1.1 billion in operating cash flow in fiscal 2023, followed by a strong $621 million in fiscal 2024.
So they threw off a lot of cash.
A lot of cash. And this robust cash generation translates directly to impressive returns on capital, which is a key measure of how efficiently a company uses its investments to generate profits. As of mid-2025, their return on equity stood at a healthy 25.3%.
25% ROE.
Yeah. And return on invested capital was 10.4%. These figures collectively indicate not just strong sales and profits, but also efficient capital deployment and effective management of their assets to generate shareholder value. It really underscores the quality of their business model.
So Core & Main has this strong foundation, significant competitive advantages, and a massive growing market. How are they planning to capitalize on this fertile environment? Our sources lay out a clear dual-pronged growth strategy. Let's start with their M&A engine. You mentioned their appetite for acquisitions. How is this strategy designed to fuel future growth?
Yeah, this is truly a core pillar of their growth, and it's very deliberate. Core & Main has established itself as a disciplined and, importantly, a preferred acquirer in this fragmented market.
Preferred, meaning sellers like selling to them.
Often, yes, because they have a reputation for closing deals, integrating respectfully, and providing opportunities for the acquired teams within a larger successful platform. They're not just buying companies. They're strategically targeting well-run businesses that expand their geographic footprint into new high-growth regions, or add key talent and specialized local knowledge, or broaden their product and service capabilities.
Like those examples you gave earlier.
Exactly. 10 acquisitions in fiscal 2023 alone, deploying $780 million. Examples like Dana Kepner, expanding in the West and Southwest. Geothermal Supply Company, adding specialized HDPE pipe capabilities. L&M Bag and Supply, adding expertise in erosion control. Each acquisition isn't just about adding revenue. It strategically enhances their market position, deepens their local moats, and expands their specialized product offerings, making them even more indispensable to their customers.
It sounds like a very targeted and synergistic approach to M&A.
Yeah.
But it's not all acquisitions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our sources also highlight a strong organic growth component. And this next bit is a real aha moment for me personally.
Okay.
A key focus on expanding private label products. Why is that so significant for a distributor like Core & Main? Isn't their job just selling other people's brands?
Traditionally, yes, but this is truly a fascinating strategic move. And what's compelling here is the sheer margin power it provides. Management states that these private label products typically yield gross margins that are 1.5 to 2.0 times higher than what they achieve on traditional branded products.
1.5 to 2 times higher margins.
That's what they're saying. In fiscal 2023, these products already represented over 2% of their cost of goods sold, and the long-term goal is to exceed 10%. This is a significant, controllable lever for margin enhancement, a clear path to driving higher overall company profitability.
So how does it work? They put their own name on pipes.
Essentially, yes, or develop specific product lines under their own brands. By developing and selling their own private label products, Core & Main transforms from just a distributor of other manufacturers' goods into a brand owner.
Interesting.
This gives them greater control over the supply chain, from sourcing raw materials to dictating product specifications, and ultimately greater control over their profitability. It's a very sophisticated move to combat potential long-term margin pressure inherent in the distribution industry. Allows them to capture more value across the entire product lifecycle. It represents, I think, a mature and forward-thinking approach to organic growth and profitability.
That's a clever way to boost profitability. Beyond private label, what other organic initiatives are they pursuing to drive growth from within?
They're pursuing a pretty holistic approach to organic growth. Firstly, they're actively working to accelerate the adoption of new advanced technologies.
Like the smart meters again?
Exactly. Pushing smart metering solutions, especially AMI, which offers that real-time data for leak detection, water conservation. And also advanced treatment products for water quality challenges like PFAS. They leverage their consultative sales approach here, educating customers on the long-term benefits.
Okay, technology adoption.
What's
Secondly, digital transformation is a significant focus. Their online advantage platform. It's designed to streamline procurement, project management, order tracking for their customers. By making it easier and more efficient for clients to do business with them digitally, they further embed themselves into customer operations, creates even stickier relationships, reduces those customer switching costs.
Makes sense. Easier to order, less likely to leave.
Right. And finally, they're not just buying existing businesses. They are selectively opening new greenfield branches in underserved markets.
Greenfield, meaning starting from scratch.
Starting from scratch, yeah. They've opened nearly 20 new locations recently. These provide another avenue for organic growth as these locations mature, build local relationships, and gain market share in areas where their presence was previously limited. So it's a comprehensive strategy: technology, strategic expansion, product innovation.
With all this ambitious growth and investment, both organic and M&A, how are they managing their capital? The sources detail a disciplined approach to capital allocation, which sounds crucial for balancing expansion with financial stability.
Yeah, their strategy clearly prioritizes reinvestment in the business. That means funding both organic initiatives, like those new greenfield branches and digital platforms, and their value-accretive M&A strategy. As we mentioned, fiscal 2023 alone, they deployed that substantial $780 million on acquisitions.
Big number.
It is. And alongside this growth focus, they maintain a prudent capital structure. Their net debt stood around $2.275 billion as of February 2025. They actively manage interest rate risk, which is important given their debt levels and the current interest rate environment.
How do they manage that risk?
Well, for example, our sources indicate they use interest rate swaps. Mm-hmm. One swap with a notional amount of $800 million was in place to convert a portion of their floating rate debt to a fixed rate. And they even executed a forward starting swap for future protection. It demonstrates a proactive approach to financial risk management.
Okay, smart moves.
Yeah.
What about returns to shareholders? Dividends? Buybacks?
Right. Well, they don't pay a regular cash dividend. Their credit agreements contain restrictions on this, which is pretty common for growth-focused companies retaining cash for reinvestment.
Makes sense. Need the cash for M&A.
Exactly. But they have authorized a significant share repurchase program up to $500 million. They've already repurchased $176 million in fiscal 2024 and an additional $39 million in the first quarter of fiscal 2025. This signals management's confidence in the business and its belief that the stock is an attractive use of capital for delivering shareholder returns.
Okay, no company operates in a vacuum, right?
Yeah.
And Core & Main has faced its share of recent challenges, particularly with the dynamic macroeconomic environment between 2022 and 2024. How effectively have they navigated these headwinds, things like inflation and rising interest rates?
Yeah, this is where management's execution really stands out, I think. During that surge of inflation and input costs, especially for materials like PVC pipe, ductile iron.
Prices went nuts for a while.
They really did. But Core & Main demonstrated strong pricing discipline. They successfully passed those increased costs through to customers, which was crucial for protecting gross margins and actually contributed positively to their revenue growth during that period.
So they managed inflation well. What about when things cooled off?
Well, as supply chains normalized more recently, they did face, and I quote, slightly lower selling prices in the fourth quarter of fiscal 2024, and the lagging effect of selling through higher average cost of inventory in the first quarter of fiscal 2025, basically selling cheaper stuff they bought when it was expensive.
Right, that lag effect.
Exactly. But they generally managed to maintain overall profitability through a combination of their margin initiatives and the accretive impact of acquisitions.
And interest rates, that must have had an impact.
It presented a dual challenge. Firstly, higher borrowing costs for municipalities could, in theory, delay or scale back some projects, especially those without federal funding support. Secondly, it increased Core & Main's own interest expense on their floating rate debt.
Although they hedged some of that.
They used those interest rate swaps we discussed to mitigate a significant portion of that exposure. Yeah. High interest rates also directly impacted the more cyclical residential and non-residential construction markets they serve. They maintained a cautious stance there. But despite these substantial macroeconomic headwinds, management maintained strong gross margins, generated significant cash flow, and crucially, continued to execute their long-term growth strategy, which is really a testament to their agility and strategic focus.
So it sounds like steady hands at the wheel, especially during turbulent times. What can our sources tell us about the management team itself and the corporate governance? Who's leading this charge?
Well, there was a planned leadership transition fairly recently in March 2025, which our sources detail, but it really speaks to continuity rather than disruption. Mark R. Witkowski, who was the long-tenured chief financial officer, he was promoted to CEO, with the former CEO, Stephen Auclair, transitioning to executive chair. This move signals a continued focus on disciplined financial execution, that's Mr. Witkowski's deep background, while retaining the strategic vision of Mr. Leclerc. Robin L. Bradbury, another long-tenured finance leader within the company, was promoted to CFO.
So experience team, internal promotions.
Deep experience, yeah. Not just within Core and Main, but across the broader industrial distribution sector. And they have, importantly, overseen those 15 consecutive years of sales growth we mentioned.
A track record.
Very good. And critically, executive officers and directors own approximately 3.5% of the company's voting power, with a significant portion of their compensation tied to equity.
Skin in the game.
Exactly. It directly aligns their financial interests with the company's long-term performance and shareholder value creation. Furthermore, they maintain robust corporate governance. They have a lead independent director, and all key board committees, audit, talent and comp, nominating and governance are entirely independent. Ensures strong oversight and accountability.
All right, let's talk about the big questions then. Given everything we've discussed, the massive market opportunity, their competitive advantages, the growth strategies, capable leadership, is the current valuation justified? And maybe more importantly, what are the key risks you, our listener, should be acutely aware of?
This truly raises an important question for any investor, doesn't it? The current valuation is certainly demanding.
Demanding, meaning high.
Meaning high, yes. Our sources show Core and Main trading at multiples like a 30x PE ratio.
Which 30 times earnings.
Right. And a 16.9x EV/EBITDA ratio, that's enterprise value to earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization, both as of mid-2025. These multiples are at a premium to the broader market and even slightly above its main competitor, Ferguson Plucking.
Why the premium then?
Well, this premium suggests the market is pricing in a superior growth profile, likely due to Core and Main being a pure play on the U.S. water infrastructure theme and its aggressive, value-accretive M&A strategy.
So the market believes the story.
It seems to. The justification for this valuation hinges entirely on your conviction. Your conviction in the longevity and scale of this secular water infrastructure supercycle, and management's continued ability to execute its M&A playbook and organic growth initiatives with precision. At these levels, frankly, there's little room for error. The company must continue to deliver strong results to meet those high market expectations.
Okay. High expectations, high bar. What could go wrong? What are the potential pitfalls, the risks that could impact Core and Main's trajectory?
Our sources outline several critical risk factors that merit attention. On the business side, there's always M&A execution and integration risk.
Buying companies isn't easy.
No. Overpaying for acquisitions or failing to effectively integrate newly acquired companies and achieve the expected synergies that could dilute shareholder value. Dependence on key local personnel is also a factor. That deep local knowledge we emphasized, it often resides with specific individuals. Talent retention is vital.
Right. People leave.
People leave. Given their complex operations and digital platforms, IT system failures, or worse, cybersecurity breaches could disrupt operations, impact customer trust, and incur significant costs. Supply chain and inventory management risks, particularly with volatile raw material prices for pipes and fittings, those are ongoing concerns.
Okay, those are business risks. What about industry or financial risks?
From an industry perspective, despite the strong secular tailwinds, a severe or prolonged economic downturn could still delay projects, especially in those more cyclical residential and non-residential segments. It could potentially impact municipal budgets too, even with BIL funding. Intense competition, particularly from Ferguson, could also lead to margin compression if they resort to aggressive pricing.
And financially.
Financially, their debt load and exposure to interest rate fluctuations, despite their hedging strategies, remain considerations. And fundamentally, if Core and Main fails to meet the market's high growth expectations, or if there's just a broader market derating of premium valued companies, the stock price could correct significantly. These are all factors that need to be carefully monitored.
Let's quickly revisit some of those key questions our sources address that really kind of sum up this deep dive. How sustainable is that competitive moat in an increasingly digital world? What's the realistic long-term growth potential given those massive infrastructure needs? How well has management truly navigated those macro headwinds we just discussed? And ultimately, is that valuation justified?
Right. Let's try and synthesize the answers our sources provide. First, the moat.
It appears highly sustainable. The fundamental need for physical distribution and deep local knowledge in this industry, it isn't going away. And digital tools actually seem to strengthen it for incumbents like Core and Main by making them easier to do business with rather than dismantling the core advantage.
Okay, moat looks solid. Growth potential.
Long-term growth potential looks robust, likely in the mid to high single digits annually, driven by an estimated 5% to 7% market compound annual growth rate for the underlying waterworks market, plus maybe an additional 2% to 4% from their disciplined M&A strategy.
So potentially high single-digit growth. Management execution.
Management has indeed proven highly effective in navigating recent headwinds. They've adeptly protected margins, continued to execute their growth strategy through challenging times.
And the big one, valuation.
The demanding valuation. It's justified if the secular supercycle holds for decades and if M&A execution remains strong and value accretive. But as we've discussed, that premium leaves little margin for error. It requires continued, pretty much flawless execution. Hashtag tag outro.
So what does this all mean for you, our curious listener? We've delved deep into Core and Main, seeing them not just as a specialized distributor, but really as a crucial player, kind of an invisible lifeline in an industry poised for a multi-decade transformation. We've talked about a staggering, what was it, $1.25 trillion need for water infrastructure, the unique, almost irreplaceable local knowledge moat they've built, their smart M&A and high-margin private label strategies, and of course, the risks that naturally come with high expectations. Here's maybe a thought to mull over as you go about your day. As climate change continues to put increasing pressure on existing infrastructure, water resources, impacting everything from droughts to floods, will the current investment estimates prove to be just the beginning? Just the tip of the iceberg of what's truly needed to secure our future? And how might Core and Main continue to evolve, innovate, and expand to meet these ever-growing, absolutely essential demands?
Yeah, this raises an important question for you to consider, really far beyond the financials. The story of Core and Main is, in many ways, a testament to the essential, often unseen, work that underpins our modern society. It's a powerful reminder that some of the most critical challenges we face, like aging infrastructure, like resource scarcity, also present some of the most compelling long-term opportunities, opportunities for strategic, well-positioned companies. The true deep dive really continues in your own exploration of how these critical fundamental sectors will not only shape our collective future, but also directly impact the quality of life in communities right around the world.